Okay, yeah, I know. We could be done, couldn't we? I think the last baby we might have blessed in person was Indiana Finn.
No, I think it
was Alicia's baby. Yes. Oh, yes, it was Alicia's baby. Thank you.
Amelia.
Thank you, Leah, for it. Thank you. That, yes, it was. Our children are a good way for us to remember what we came here for. You know, this is where our hope lies. This is where we continue to do what we do so that we make the world as good as we can, because we've done our part of messing it up. We do what we can to make the world a better place for them to live in, so that they know that until they can make those big worldly decisions on their own, we've got them. We've got their backs and always will. At the beginning of the book of John, it says, "In the beginning was the Word." Now, if you look at it in Greek translation, that word is logos. And logos means not only creation, but it means bringing an idea into form, into manifestation. That is the very short, non-theological explanation for the word logos and the beginning of the book of John. If you'd like to do further research, I can promise you it will take you down a theological rabbit hole of what all of that means. So if you're into theology, look up the book of John and the word logos and see where it takes you. I started reading it yesterday and went, nah, not going to do that. So you're welcome. But today we're going to talk about the idea that we create with our word and how important our words are. And today we had these parents name, this is annoying, we had these parents name their children out loud to you to announce their name so that their names are in their mouths, their names are in your ears. And we know that when you pick names, whether it's for a child or for a pet, there's usually a meaning to that name, a reason that that's important. Maybe it's family heritage. Maybe because the origins of that word speak to you, and that's why you name your child that name. And so in the beginning, let's see the best way to put this. I'm going to go all the way back now to the New Testament. The Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, the Torah. So the book of Genesis has all those great stories that we go, that didn't really happen, did it? But all of those stories there, all those allegories are there to explain a question that human beings have, the very essential questions. Where did we come from? Why is there evil in the world? Why do we speak different languages? What happens when God's upset? All those questions are explained in the book of Genesis in the way that they needed to be explained back in the day. So, you know, in the beginning of Genesis, God said, let there be, and then that thing was. So there's logos right there. Named a thing, and it came into being. It doesn't matter whether you're a creationist and you think it happened exactly that way and the entire universe was created in 7 days. Just saying. Or you can also have a scientific belief in evolution and the theories of the origins of the universe, which is just one way of taking all those big ideas. You can condense them down and say, in one day, or billions of years, on the second day, or billions of years. Doesn't matter which way you go on the whole idea of how the universe was created. What's important is that there was a concept that came into being. So you know, if you've been around Unity for a little while, you know that we talk about creating our experience with our thoughts. And the way we respond to the world is the way we consider the world, the way we think about the world, the way we speak about the world. That's what our experience is. And so it's important for us to be aware of and conscious of the words that we're using or not using. In other words, if you're not experiencing something in your life right now that you'd like to have, get very precise about the words that you want to use in order for that thing to come into being. Use your own power of logos. You want a healthy, loving, safe, growthful relationship? Speak those words. If you want to see abundance everywhere, including in your checkbook, speak the words of abundance and give thanks for everything, like out loud, with words. So we know that there's a creative power that is engaged there. And it's modeled for us from the very beginning. It's also important for us to know that that we are responsible for our feelings, we're responsible for our emotions, we're responsible for the feelings behind the words that we say. In other words, see how you define yourself. If you find yourself saying, "I have always been this way," ask yourself if that is really what you want to be. If you say, "Oh, I've always been high strung," have you really? And is that what you want to continue? Or do you want to have a life of ease and joy and relaxation? Or are you defining certain moments that experiences bring up for you, where you get a little tense, you get a little overexcited? We're studying right now Brené Brown's Atlas of the Heart. And what she says in this is that people can mostly define three emotions: happy, sad, angry. And in this book, she explores 87 human emotions. And that's just beginning to scratch the surface. We're very complex people. And you remember when Unity first started out, it was a revolutionary idea for people to think about the fact that their thoughts affected how they experienced the world and their reactions to it. Because, and I'm overgeneralizing here, but it used to be, well, the church tells me what to do, I do that, and then I'm supposed to get certain results. Yeah? Did you kind of grow up that way? Follow these rules, and then you will have what you need, unless you don't. That's confusing. So when Unity came along, it said, all right, let's try this. Let's try mind over matter, if you will. Let's try using your thoughts to shape your experience. This gave people a little bit of autonomy in their spiritual life. It gave them a sense of self-determination, a way to explore how they want to experience the world. And so, of course, one of the big ways we do that is through prayer and affirming that which we want to see in cooperation with Spirit. Now, what happened at the beginning of Unity was people said, oh, okay, well, if I want to experience good things, I'm going to affirm that all there is happy, happy, joy, joy. And that got a little messy, because it was beginning to make people think that if they didn't have happy, happy, joy, joy going on all the time, then they weren't doing it right. And if you're one who came out of the rule book of religion, then here's another rule book of religion that I have a good chance of failing. So it became important over time for us not to just say, cancel, cancel, I don't see this thing going on, to, I see this thing. I see its temporary effect. And I affirm that there is something greater. So we began to mature in the way we handled our spiritual life. We became more connected with God through that. But if we're going to create with our lives, it's important for us to look at what kind of feelings and emotions we have behind the words we use. Now, I read today Very good thing to read with breakfast this morning about how hot it's going to be this summer. And so it would be foolish for me to say, it's not hot. Everything is good. I'm cool. Okay, try that. But I think I'd rather say, my body adjusts as it needs to tolerate the heat. I slow myself down when I need to. I drink plenty of fluids because I need to. I remember they said it could be comparable to the summer of 2011. That was brutal. I was seriously into horseback riding during those years, in the early 2010s and on. And it was so hot that we were bringing our pasture horses into the shade as often as we could just to bring them some relief, because we could do that. And hay had gotten so scarce that the owner of our barn bought a trailer so that they could go to, Minnesota, to get hay and bring it back. Because there wasn't hay to be found in any of the surrounding states. And the price per bale was astronomical. And we were worried about our horses. It was expensive to feed them. It was expensive to get supplemental feed if there wasn't quite enough hay and forage for them. And we were worried about them colicking during heat, maybe not drinking enough water. So, and riding, oh, yeah, it was fun to ride that summer. Just sitting up atop a 1,200-pound hot-blooded animal in the heat, doing exercise. I got real lean and mean that summer. And I look back at it now, and it felt like a great cleansing, you know? It felt like getting rid of all the excess, everything, and really knuckling down to the hard work. And those of you that are runners, those of you that do endurance sports, that's what it was like for me that summer anyway. So I know that as we go into this summer, I'm doing everything that I can in order to conserve water, to keep the temperature reasonable. The only thing worse than having the power grid fail when it's bitter cold outside is having the power grid fail when it's like hell outside. So I'm already watching the words that I'm using about this summer that's coming. I'm not scared. I don't think any of us are scared. But we are slowing ourselves down a little bit, wearing linen and cotton, because it's going to be a hot summer. Now, if I have the intention to remain calm and centered and in God despite the climate, then it begins to be a practice that I can incorporate on a daily basis and not have to slog my way out of it all the time. So in order for us to determine how we're going to create with the feelings behind the words and the thoughts, it's important for us to be able to identify those and to use more than happy, sad, angry, or hot. And I bring up that crucial summer 11 years ago because sometimes when we're uncomfortable, we think our feelings are about one thing when it's really about something else. And that's what we started talking about on Wednesday night, was what's underneath the feeling, underneath the feeling, underneath the feeling. Jesus had a really good way of talking to people when they would ask him a question, when they would challenge him. He would come back to them with a question, so that it allowed them to go deeper into what they were actually feeling, so that he could connect with them. If we just took the time in every human interaction we had to get to the feeling underneath the feeling that we're seeing, we'd have a better chance to connect with each other. We'd have a better chance of showing the same compassion that Jesus showed to people. You know, he let the rich young man, a rich young man came up to Jesus like this, said, "You mean I got to give all my stuff away in order to be holy?" I paraphrase. And he said, "Unless you're willing to place less importance on the worldly things, you will not experience the fullness of God." And the rich young man walked away, and we don't know what happened, but I bet at the very least he went, So if we're going to take responsibility for what we create, it's important for us to address it on every single level. It's important for us to get down into our bodies, into our feelings, and see where we are. I shared with the class the other night that when I was in ministerial school, my Bible teacher, who I just adored, whose voice I still hear in my head all the time when I'm speaking of Scripture, I went up to him really upset about something we discussed in class that day, and I couldn't settle with the metaphysical interpretation. I couldn't settle with any interpretation. And so I went up and I said, "I just don't get it. If this was this, then why was this?" And rather than answering my question in a scholarly way, in an academic way, he said, looking right in my eyes, he said, "How old is the person asking that question?" Nailed it. Because tears sprang into my eyes. And I realized that it was my 9-year-old who was first exposed to Sunday school lessons in the King James Version in the Baptist Church. That was the one asking the question. So if that one sentence, "How old is the person asking that question?" He let me get all the way down to uncovering to myself deeply held beliefs that needed to be challenged and examined. I bless him every day for that, because it informs me that when I'm having a really big feeling, there's probably something underneath it, and there's probably, usually, a child that I used to be that's still alive and well in there, clamoring for attention. So, we also talked a little more about some really earthy things in Wednesday night class about how we classify people. It's real easy for us to see somebody else's feelings on display and decide that that's who they are, especially if they're unpleasant. And that's not the word I used in class the other night. We decide we know who other people are by what they're displaying to us. Do we want that for ourselves? If somebody catches me in a bad moment, do I want them to think forever that's who I am? Please, God, no. And so the way we start this process is to say, what is it I'm experiencing today? So I woke up this morning myself, and I just got out of bed kind of like, I could feel my body tensed up as I rolled out of bed. And I asked myself, what is this about today? What is this? Well, this is, I have a big day at the dentist tomorrow. Another one. This is, will I do these children and their families justice when I bless them today? Will I honor them the way I intend? Have to clean out a storage building that I'd one of Bill's old storage buildings. Get to clean that out on Tuesday. I think it's going to be 102. So I woke up this morning going, wah, wah. Yes, that's what your minister's like when she wakes up on Sunday mornings before she comes to impart truth here on this stage. I mean, we're bound to our humanness, but it's not all that we are. And so I just started thinking and praying. Let my words be Spirit's words today. Let my thoughts be organized and cogent and bring something. Don't worry about tomorrow. Today's got its own worries. Jesus said something kind of like that too. Don't worry about tomorrow. Today's got enough in it. So, you know, the part of myself that goes, oh, well, I've always been a worrier. I would like to just dismantle that right here in front of you. Would you care to do the same? Listen, when we were in class together the other night, it became very clear to all of us as we gathered in this unique and vulnerable group with each other that we're all still reeling from the last 2 years and 4 months. Still reeling from it. You know, we're modern-day people walking around on the earth, taking all our mod cons for granted. Modern conveniences. Sorry, it's mod cons in my brain. My brother-in-law, may his soul rest in peace, was Australian. He was always talking about the mod cons. So we live in this world that's very modern and convenient, and we're Western, and we're developed nation and all of that, and then suddenly we're faced with our survival. We're not used to using that part of our brains. We weren't used to using that part of our brains when we had that terrible winter storm last year, losing electricity and water and warmth and safety and food. And so that has a visceral effect on us. That gets all the way down into ourselves. And we're still in a sense of dis-ease about it until our bodies get fully regulated again to whatever normal is supposed to look like. Until we can feel comfortable with that little part of us that just looks over our shoulder for a moment to see what's coming next. And what we can be assured of is that something will come. Life will continue to happen around us. So it's best that we know where we are today, where we're going, how we're walking with God into it. That's what's important to us. And the words that we use around our experience are not just words that we can fling out there unconsciously anymore. We can define ourselves with a little more finesse, don't you think? We can look a little bit deeper. We can be unafraid to say, this is what I'm feeling today, and I know that this is temporary, and that I am creating something that is bigger and more purposeful and at peace in my own life. Now we get hung up when we say, and I want that to all happen by 4 o'clock this afternoon. Our part is in being patient with the timing of Spirit, knowing that there are circumstances and events occurring all around us that weave us together in this golden tapestry. We can only see a few threads at a time. We're good to identify our thread and trust that it is weaving in and out with others. I renewed an acquaintance this week. The last time I saw this person was 30 years ago. And yet time and space have not made a difference, except that they have informed our personal experiences better that we can relate to each other. Isn't that a beautiful thing? If we can achieve that on earth with each other, we're already experiencing a little bit of heaven, aren't we? Because that's what it is. I wrote down a whole bunch of words about this topic today that I haven't really used a whole lot of. So I guess my homework for this is to be conscious of what it is you're feeling. And if the feeling's really big, you can be guaranteed that there's something underneath it that gets closer to the heart of the matter. Usually it's fear, and underneath that is sadness. A lot of times it's anger, and underneath that is sadness. There's much for us to grieve in the world, isn't there? We're feeling human beings. We still have Ukraine represented here. And in my work bag, I still have the names of the children and teachers in Uvalde. And that's just a few. That's just a few. They stand as representatives of human suffering. And we're affected by that. But we're also affected by joy. We are moved by joy. We're moved by these young lives that you saw up here in front of you and the families that nurture them and their connection to us. You may never see Nick and Emily again. I don't mean that to sound as dire as it does, Nick. Okay, let's rephrase, just back it up a little bit. It may be a while before our paths cross again. Nevertheless, you will not forget them. They now occupy a little room in your heart. And when you think of little children, you'll think of baby Dane. And you'll think of his, wow, extraordinary cousin, dear Bertie, who has run amongst us before the pandemic, and then he grew up during it. And so we have the whole of human experience. If you feel like your feelings are going to overwhelm you one day, stop for a second and say, overwhelmed. That's what I'm feeling right now. And just being able to say, oh, wow, I'm overwhelmed. Because what we'll do is we'll go faster and faster and faster to not feel overwhelmed. Doesn't work. Never works. If we're going to create, we need to know where it is we're creating from. So you don't want to be in a relationship with God in which you're saying, I demand abundance, damn it. Guessing that the feeling you've got underneath those words probably isn't the one you want to create from. If you feel broken, if you feel broken, just say, I feel broken today. I feel broken. I feel hopeless. And I know that this is temporary. And can I have a hug? Is it okay if I cry? I'm just going to go over here and breathe for a minute. I'm going to stand here on my 2 feet, and I'm going to be comforted by the great comforter, the source of everything. And I will know that I'm bigger than my brokenness, and that I will go beyond this brokenness. And so today, I claim comfort. I claim healing. And beloved, lo, it is done unto you, as you say. That's what we're about. We're about being transparent and authentic to and with ourselves. That way, we're available to God. We're available to each other. Our compassion faucet turns on with a great flow. Our ability to connect is more available. It's more real. That's what our spiritual journey is about. And if it's happy, happy, joy, joy, there's the gravy for the day. I think I'd rather have uncomfortable authenticity than false happiness. How about you? So as we go on, next week you're going to have Finn with you again. Yay. And then the Sunday after that is Father's Day. And when we talked about feminine energy during Mother's Day, when we talk about masculine energy for Father's Day, we're talking about that ability to take a thing from thought and feeling and bring it into form. It requires all of it. It requires all of it for us to be balanced. So to thine own self be true. The greatest friend you'll ever have is yourself. And you walk with God every day. Amen. So if you will, you don't have to change positions. You don't have to do anything but breathe. If you will, just settle into yourself without judgment. Without any judgment. Without any chatter going on about how you ought to be feeling. Or if you're bored, that's fine. Sorry, but if you're bored, just, okay, I feel a little apathy right now, God. If you're uncertain, just be with your uncertainty. Because the great paradox and the great comfort to us is knowing that the moment we acknowledge, everything comes rushing in to support us. And remember that there was one who walked upon the earth, many, who showed us how to do this. Showed us how to drink when we're thirsty, to rest when we're weary, to laugh and to share fellowship with others in order to know the fruit of spirit. And even acknowledge the lonely moments. Immediately then turning to the Great Spirit. So in the words of the Desiderata, go placidly amid the noise and haste. Above all, be patient with yourself. You beautiful, incredible, imperfectly perfect human being. And even when the storms come, beloved, you ride those waves. You are not swamped by them. And just for a moment, you can put your hand on your heart if you so desire. To say, I accept myself exactly as God accepts me. Help. Help thou my unacceptance. And may we all be at peace with our stories, everything that has brought us to this very moment. Everything that we're experiencing right now, and every step with God that we take from this moment forward. For surely we are never, never alone. And so it is. And so it is. Amen.